Hey, we're Hayseed Dixie, and you're listening to Lee Williams.
Astro lover, always hiding under the covers till I talk to your daddy, he say. He say you ain't seen nothing till you're down on a muffin, and you're sure to be changing your way. I met a cheerleader, was a real young bleeder, all the times I could reminisce. Cause the best things of loving with her sister and her cousin only started with a little kiss like this. Saw swinging with the boys in the school and your feet flying up in the air. Sing your head diddy with your kitty in the middle and you swing like you didn't care. So I took a big chance at the high school dance with a missy who was ready to play. It wasn't me she was fooling, cause she knew what she was doing when she told me how to walk this way. She told me to walk this way, walk this way, walk this way, walk this way. Walk this way, talk this way, she told me to walk this way, talk this way, just give me a kiss. I like this. Sweetie with a classic kind of sassy little skirt climbing way up her knee. Now, there was three young ladies in the school gym locker when I noticed they was looking at me. I was a high school loser, never made it with a lady till the boys told me something I missed. And then my next door neighbor with a daughter had a favorite and gave her just a little kiss like this. Saw swinging with the boys in the school and your feet flying up in the air. Sing your head diddle with your kitty in the middle and you swing like you didn't care. So I took a big chance at the high school dance with a missy who was ready to play. It wasn't me she was fooling, cause she knew what she was doing when she told me how to walk this way. She told me to walk this way, talk this way, walk this way, talk this way. She told me to walk this way, talk this way. She said walk this way, talk this way. Just give me a kiss. All like this.
Anyway, I'm here in Bournemouth, and John Wheeler from Hayseed Dixie. Welcome.
Thank you very much indeed. Take time to talk to me. What would you like to talk about, man?
Well, I think we're going to talk about the band and how it started and your current music and the current tour, really.
Okay. Well, 23 years ago is when the first album of the band came. Well, April 17th of 2001, so 22 years ago. The first album was a bunch of AC/DC songs reimagined as hillbilly pieces. We never really were intending to start a band. It was just kind of a thought experiment. I'd played in a lot of college fraternity parties before that and oftentimes thrown in a hard rock song done kind of country style because this was in the South. It usually went over quite well. I met a guy named Mike Daly who that plays pedal steel for Hank Williams Jr. He played dobro on our first album. He didn't leave Hank's band to be part of Hey See Dixie for understandable reasons, but I'd met him at a recording session. We got to talking about doing AC/DC songs country style, and he had already worked out a couple of the signature licks on the dobro. So we got together and made this record in a weekend, really. Just as something to pass around to our buddies. This is back when you'd still burn CDs on computers,
sure,
you know,
sure,
in 2000.
Sure, sure.
And I don't think anybody thought it was ever going to be commercially released or that it was going to become a touring act or anything. It was just kind of a wonder what that would sound like. Somebody can play us at their barbecue. And completely independently of us, over the next few months, it got copied and copied and copied and started turning up on morning shows in the States, a couple big syndicated ones. And they are, one of those guys is one of the ones who coined the term rock grass to describe it, which I thought, that's good, I'll use that. Because, hey, you know, why do all the work?
That's right.
I thought, well, what the heck, if it's getting on the radio, I might as well shop it around, see if I can get a distribution deal for it record-wise. And every label said no, except for this one little independent label called Dual Tone, who put it out and had a pretty good distributor and stuck a morning show promoter on it. I spent the next 8-9 weeks doing 4-5-6 hours a day of radio interviews with every damn radio station in the country. Things sold 150,000 pieces. And we thought, okay, we better get a band together and go tour, because there kind of was no band at the moment,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
And Mike was like, well, I don't really want to, you know, leave Hank Jr.'s band, because I'm not sure how long this is going to last. I said, no, of course you don't want to do that. So I was looking for a dobro player and never found one, because there's no banjo on the first record. It's dobro, guitar, mandolin, fiddle.
Sure.
Found the Reno brothers at the time who were up for it. One of them played mandolin, one of them played banjo, and they played with us for the next 13 years. Jake, who's standing here, I'd known from other sessions, played bass with us. He had an acoustic bass guitar. I didn't know anybody else that had one.
Right.
It didn't play upright or electric bass. And he's still here. So basically, from then on, we just kind of followed our nose. After the first record did what it did in America in 2001, we thought, well, let's take this formula, and if it's a formula, not really a formula, but other than just reimagine songs as hillbilly songs. And I also had a couple of originals on the second record that I thought would be kind of, sardonic or satirical in nature, that would be appropriate for the Bob and Tom show, which was something I really wasn't very familiar with. I never listened to a lot of American morning radio, because being a musician, I mean, I'm not up at 6:30 in the morning. If I can keep from it, I'm not.
Yeah, sure.
You know, if I was, I'd probably be listening to Steve Inskeep in Morning Edition, because I'm an NPR kind of guy. But these shows at that time, anyway, I don't know about now. I don't know how many people listen to the radio anymore. But at that time, there were a lot of people listening to them. So we kind of went out the second tour and got in a couple of cars and drove around, turned up in all these guys' studios, you know, and did our thing, which kind of grew as we went. You know, we kind of developed a backstory for it and a bit of a hillbilly shtick and stuff. And this was, to a large extent, legitimate. I mean, I am from East Tennessee, and the Renos were from Virginia, Jake's from Florida, so, I mean, we weren't making these accents up or anything. But everything you do on stage is a little bit of a exaggeration of elements.
Hyperbole.
Yeah, a bit of exaggeration of parts of your own personality. I think that's, you know, otherwise our own personal lives are actually not that wild and radical. I've been with the same woman for 16 years. I got two daughters. We have a Cocker Spaniel. We walk in the woods. I mean, you know, does anybody really want to hear about that? Maybe. I don't know. There's a great bicycle path that goes around Heidelberg. You can come in behind the castle. I mean, this is what my days are spent doing when I'm not on the road. And I'm totally good with that, you know. But that's not necessarily the stories you want to be telling on stage, right? I mean, yeah. And so since then we've made 16 other albums. The UK and Western Europe has sort of shown us, I think, the most enduring appreciation. I think maybe because there is an element in the UK, somewhat in Ireland, particularly Northern Ireland, and sort of up the Belgium to Denmark, Norway stretch of northwestern Europe, where people do understand sort of self-referential humor in a way that, and I think you sort of have to be able to do that to really get what our band is about. Is it supposed to be, you know, taking the mickey out of everything, including your own selves, and that everything is kind of a fit to be skewered in a way, you know, in kind of a loving way, you know. So I think British audiences in particular get that. Some Americans do too, but since about 2005 or so, when we came over here and Radio 2 started playing us, and we opened the main stage at Glastonbury, and I married a British woman, and I don't know, moved over here. We could also tour here much more easily than we could in the States, because, man, once you get west of the Mississippi, 8, 10, 12-hour drives between places. Nobody goes out during the week. Everybody wants a Friday or a Saturday because of the tyranny of distance.
Sure.
Very few people live, other than like New York or Chicago or something, very few people live down in the inner city areas. They'll live out in the suburbs. So to try to get those guys to drive back into town after work, 45 minutes to go to a club show on Tuesday night is just almost impossible. So it makes, and there's a 21-year-old drinking age in the States too, compared to 18 here, so you don't have any of the younger people. So it's really tough, but below the theater level, to tour America and make any money out of it. And you just spend hours and hours and hours driving down the road. You get a couple of years of it, got over here and realized you could drive an hour and a half between shows. You could play every night of the week. And I thought, well, hey.
That's the way.
Yeah. So the humor of the band and a lot of the material since about 05 or 06 has kind of been tailored more in a direction of Northwestern European taste. I mean, because not that many people in America really know Motorhead songs and stuff.
A few of the real hard rock
aimed towards the British. A lot of the material that we picked after the third album was an American one, and though it's just remained.
Hey, we're Hayseed Dixie, and you're listening to Lee Williams. Top. Had guts, got the glory.
came over to England, you came over and did a show which is all about AC/DC.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, sorry. My fault. Yeah, well, the first tour that we did was in August 2004. And, yeah, the guy who originally brought us over had a festival in Wales. It was kind of like an AC/DC convention, and he had a bunch of tribute acts, and people bringing memorabilia and that kind of thing. So he bought our plane tickets, and that was kind of what got us to the UK the first time. And I knew these guys that ran a biker bar in Edinburgh. I didn't know them, but they sent me emails previous saying, you know, if you ever get over here, we'd love to put on some shows in Scotland. Once we had that date, I asked the guy, would you mind if we went and did some other shows in the UK? And he said, just don't do anything else in Wales. I said, fine, no problem. So our first UK tour was this AC/DC festival, four like club shows in Scotland and the borderline in London. But that was our first sort of UK tour. And it just sort of happened to coincide with when Jeremy Vine started playing our records on radio too. So everything sold out. So I think all the, you know, the promoters.
Because you did some jingles for him, didn't you?
We did later, yeah. Our record label, Cook and Vinyl, lovely people, but a bit conservative in their promotional attitudes. Because I'd said to him, well, apparently this guy, I didn't know who he was. I'd never listened to Radio 2 before, but I knew it was a national radio station. And I said to the record label guy, apparently this guy's on the afternoon drive in Radio 2's playing our record quite a bit. We should, you know, try to get an in-studio session with him. And he just said, well, he doesn't do sessions. He's like a talk show, current events kind of thing that plays some music. He never has musicians in. I said, well, ask him. And they were like, no, you don't understand. There's some shows that do sessions, but his show doesn't do sessions. And I said, why don't you ask him? And they were like, no, you don't want to do that. So I thought, I don't believe him. So I sent an email myself to the address I found on the website. And the next day he emailed me back. And actually what I did was I invited him to the Borderline show. I sent him an email and said, I hear you've been playing some of our records. That's cool. I think you're based in London. We're doing a show at this place called the Borderline. It's sold out. But if you want to come, I'll happy guest list, you come on down. And he wrote back and said, that'd be great. Could I bring two guys from the show, my producer and blah, blah. I said, that'd be wonderful. So down they came, and they watched the show, and they rocked their faces off. And after the show, he came up and said, man, if you're here tomorrow, you got to come in and do my show. So, and the head of the record label was standing right there beside me, and I said, see, it really is that easy. All you could do is ask these guys.
Yeah.
And he just kind of looked at me and was like, okay, well done. But then the company that they had hired for radio promotion at the time, I can't even remember what their name was, but they put on their little report sheet of things they had gotten, you know, Jeremy Vine Afternoon Drive radio show. And I called the guy up and I was like, asshole, take that off your sheet, man. You had nothing to do with getting that. I invited him to the show. He watched our gig at the Borderline. He invited, you didn't do nothing, man. You know, take that off your report. That's going to go to some file cabinet. You're going to claim kudos on that.
Yeah. So what's the latest album?
The latest album is called Shattered Grass. It's a bunch of original songs, kind of in an outlaw country sort of format, mostly that were written during the pandemic when we were sitting around and couldn't do anything else. And I think we're kind of at a point where it doesn't make much difference what we record now, because it's only going to be about two songs from the show get in it anyway. You know, we've been going long enough now. I think that there's a certain body of material people sort of expect to hear at the shows, and I don't want to be, you know, one of those guys who walks out and plays his whole brand new album, two previous hits, and says, thank you, good night. I think that's kind of disrespectful.
No. Well, the fans are coming. They want to start coming to see the hits or the songs that you're recognized
for. So any new record we make now, there's probably going to be like two songs from it in the show, and then the rest of it's going to be on. So it kind of doesn't matter what we do for an album. If people like it or hate it or ignore it, it sort of makes no difference, which is kind of liberating in a lot of ways. It means you can record whatever you want to. That's kind of how we've been feeling lately, is going more down that kind of, I shouldn't call it outlaw country because it doesn't sound like that. We're playing it on our instrumentation, but the sort of the roots of the songwriting structure and stuff are very much into that. And as I've gotten older, I've come to really appreciate the sort of Merle Haggard school of songwriting, of it being kind of like chorus, verse, chorus, some solo, and then chorus again. There's only eight lines in the whole song. It's really hard to do that. I mean, anybody can sit and write a 13-verse song, ramble on and on and on. There's some meaning in there somewhere. But to get it all distilled down to eight or maximum 12 lines and still tell the story, it's not easy.
No.
And I'm really respecting the challenge of trying to do that and the economy of words and stuff. So a lot of what we've been doing lately is things in that model, and I don't know. I mean, I can't predict the future, but I think for the foreseeable year or two, that seems to be where we're most interested, is in doing material on that kind of order, and sort of stories of basically working class people and whatnot. You know,
because that's what I got the most experience with, you know.
Well, it's the roots of country music, however it comes out. And you're so different to anybody else, to be truthful, which is what
sounds wise, probably. Yeah. I mean, it's probably more radical in America now than I used to think it was. There's a whole jam band scene of all these younger kids playing these instruments too, but they're doing it in a very different way than what we do. I've always kind of thought of us as being a rock and roll band that's playing on bluegrass instruments. I mean, I'm not really a bluegrass singer. None of us really are bluegrass players. Not really. I mean, I understand and like the music, but certainly not the traditional stuff. And that's not what we do, you know. If I try to play one of those songs, it very much sounds like Hazy Dixie doing it. It doesn't sound like a bluegrass band doing it, which I think is perfectly fine, you know.
Well, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Jake.
Some of that was interesting.
Well, it's been a while, but I'm back in love again. It feels so good, just like it did back then. Time has finally brought my body back to where my heart has always been. Oh, it's been a while, but I'm back in love again. I'm drinking again, I'm drinking again. When you left, I bet you thought I'd die. Honey, I didn't even cry, cause I finally found the love rocking with.
Drinking again. Hey, we're Hayseed Dixie. You're listening to Lee Wick.
It's been a while, but I finally understand. This bottle feels so good here in my hand. Lord, don't throw me out the house if I go try another brand. Oh, it's been a while, but I finally understand. I'm drinking again, I'm drinking again. When you left, I bet you thought I'd die. Honey, I didn't even cry, cause I finally found love.